It's Monday, August 7th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show presented by Toyota. It's a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that, surprise, it's Los Angeles Chargers running back Austin Eckler. Austin, what's going on, buddy?
Something feels familiar about this, you know? No, it's good to see you, man. Always a pleasure to have you on a show. I'm on your show now.
Yeah. I mean, we're on each other's show. Yes. So it's really there's no guesting here. It's just I'm talking to this podcast feed every day. You're doing it. Well, you'd be doing it once a week during the regular season, but you're here kind of as a little surprise appearance today to get people excited about the fact that you're back. Fantasy football's back. Football season's back. Dude, it's all happening.
It's in full swing right now. Like, we got all the who's going to be the sleeper picks, you know, who's injured, where's Dalvin Cook going to end up, you know, is he going to mess up a running back room, you know, like all these different, you know, conversations, you know, in the receivers, you know, who are the stud rookies going to, yeah, it's that time. It's that time. Mock drafts are happening. I have yet to do one myself. I need to do it to get my due diligence in, because I got some leagues I got coming up here. Yeah, man, it's exciting times.
Yeah. Mock drafts are big at Yahoo this year. We've been doing a few. So
how many have you done? Let's hear it.
How many we have done two mock drafts so far as like an entity. How many drafts have I done personally? That number is a state secret, honestly. Like, I can't really okay, tell you. Okay. I can't tell you. I can't tell my bosses. My bosses don't. I can't tell. Yeah, it's kind of a state secret situation. But let's just put it this way. I've got a pretty good feel about how boards are going to go. I know you are going to be a top five pick again. Kind of know where the Chargers are going. I've got a pretty good sense of how things are going this year.
Yeah. I wouldn't expect anything else. I know you're putting in that work, doing your due diligence. I feel like that's what happens when you're in this world. And if you're going to be legit in this world, you got to have an understanding of that, so you know what you're talking about. And so one of those things is doing a bunch of mock drafts when it comes time.
Yeah, real hard work. Nose is to the grindstone. Yeah, doing mock drafts and charting routes and writing articles and talking on podcasts.
It makes a difference. Yeah. People got a lot of money on the line out there. They're betting on me. Should they pick up Austin or not? Matt, they need to know.
That's the last thing they need to know from me. That's an obvious one. And we'll be talking plenty about that this preseason. I'm excited about that. You are here specifically, obviously, like I said, to say hello to the Yahoo audience again, and that's great. But you also want to let everybody know about a very cool thing going on with the Austin Eckler Foundation. So hit them with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is fantasy time as we are getting into right now. And my foundation puts on a few fantasy football leagues of their own and love to just expand on it, because in the past we've done like kind of like a basic, you know, entry. It's a donation to the foundation. There's three different tiers. And now this year with our highest tier, whoever makes it to the playoffs is getting flown out to our Kansas City game. We're going to dinner before the game, and the champion gets my jersey from that game and a custom fantasy ring that we have specifically made for the Austin Eckler Foundation. So we have upped the stakes. And as I said, you know, it comes from, you know, a donation to my foundation, which puts resources, tangible physical resources back into communities. We just finished up a weight room in Long Beach. We're about to do it up in San Francisco, washers and dryers, school equipment, physical things that people can go use. That's what my foundation is doing. And this is one of our fundraisers that we do during the year. And so you can check us out at austineckler.com. And that's where you can find all of our projects and our newest competition going on with the Fantasy League. So would love to see anyone out there participate. I jump in on a Zoom call every once in a while, so you get to meet me as well. And we have a good time. This is our third year doing it, and it's always a pleasure.
Well, definitely listeners, viewers, watchers of Eckler's Edge, like, there should be a few of those folks trying to get this thing done. So this is the week 18 game versus Kansas City.
This is, yes, the last one. I think it's, I don't know if it's 18, but it's out there. I think it's like 15 or 16. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm looking at the schedule. It's week 18.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Week 18.
Yeah. There week you go. 18. I mean, hey, that's probably going to be a big game. Hopefully, AFC, in contention type situation there.
No, it's going to be a great time. I cannot wait. I really am looking forward to this.
That's awesome, man. Anything else about the foundation that people need to know, where they need to kind of be dialed in to get a part of this?
Just last reminder, austineckler.com. If you follow me on Instagram, you also can go and click the link in my link tree to see the different tiers, see which one you want to sign up for. There's three of them. That's where the information is. austineckler.com or austineckler on Instagram. You can check my link tree.
Awesome. Well, we're not going to take up a ton of your time because you're very busy. I know that. We got camp going on. You got 1,000 meetings going on.
Yes.
But let's give the people a little sneak peek here, since this is not your regularly scheduled appearance here on the podcast and in an official Eckler's Edge episode. What can the people get excited about and expect that might be, you know, maybe a little different, a new fun wrinkle this year on Eckler's Edge?
Yeah. So I think something that I'm excited about is getting more creative with the grab bags. I want some more input from the community. And last year, I think we had it more general. It was like any questions, but now I think we're going to put some more themes on those to get more specifics. Get into some of the details, maybe a few stories from the fans that we can kind of dissect. And I know I'm going to do a little bit more homework than I have in the past too, just on some of these picks, keep putting more of my input in where I possibly can. And I know the team has been thinking of new creative ways to kind of create segments so you can kind of flow and we don't get caught in on a tangent and too long on some things, unless it's really good. But really just trying to break it down so it continues to flow where there's more, okay, like segments where it's like, maybe we're talking about, you know, a head-to-head matchup. Maybe someone got hurt. Who's a new replacement? Like, let's just segment it out. Boom, boom, boom. Let's get as much good content, bring guests on as always, and put together a good show for these guys this year.
Well, just like it is on the field, we're always trying to be more efficient. That's what you always talk about from a rushing perspective. You want to be more efficient. We want to be more efficient on this show. And we really, like you said, want to involve the community more this year. Like, we want to hear from you folks out there listening. What do you want from us, number one? And two, on a weekly basis, we want to hear what's going on in your perspective from, in the fantasy world, whether it's in your league, like the most ridiculous, outrageous thing that happened in your league. Like, we'll have Austin weigh in on that. I'll weigh in on it. It'll be a fun time. It'll keep us all connected. I'll say this, Austin, best season of Eckler's Edge yet. That's what the season's going
to
be.
That is the expectation. And now it's us. Up to us to come through and execute. Like, we got to get it done, Matt. That's on us. We got to come through and bring in some energy, right? Bring in some dope content and some good insights, and give everyone a little taste where they can't get it from anywhere else. You know, we got me who's currently playing, you who's done, you know, 2,000 mock drafts, and you know, between us, we should know all the answers.
I think we said it at one point last year, between your knowledge of like the inner workings of the injury report and, you know, replacements and some of the, peeling back the coach speak, all that, and the actual knowledge of an active player and my extreme haven't touched grass in months. That's not true. I literally mowed the grass right before this podcast. So I'm working on the grass, but yeah, you know what I mean? Dialing in on the full fantasy part of it. I think we could put together a pretty good show. And like you said, it's on us to execute. And our promise to the listeners, the watchers, the viewers, the fans is we are going to execute it. So Austin, appreciate you jumping in on this. Everybody definitely check out the Austin Eckler Foundation at Austin's Instagram. You can find it there. I want to see and find out about some Eckler's Edge fans at this dinner.
Yes.
Okay. And I want to know, and maybe you all, because since Austin's going to keep it a secret, you know, you all can tell me what you're eating, because that's what I'm most concerned about.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on. But yeah, I'm definitely excited. This is a little preview. This sparked my energy back up. Anytime I see you on the screen, man, I'm just like, yep, it's go time. So I'm looking forward to more of that.
Hell yeah, let's do it. I know we will have a lot to discuss with Austin next time he's on the show. Look forward to that. In the meantime, on to the rest of the program. All right, let's dive into the meat of the show now. It's our first episode of Positional Preview Week here in August. And joining me to talk quarterbacks today is the one and only Dalton Del Don. Dalton, what's going on, buddy?
What's up, Harmon? It's not my normal day to be on the pod, but happy you have me for this specific episode. We're talking Trey Lance and those 31 other guys in the league, right?
Dalton, I was very excited to find out how you were going to work in Trey Lance I thought he was coming up during the candidates to make the leap, you know, maybe even your guys. But right here off the top, buddy, that is impressive work.
I heard you dare me in the last podcast. I listened. So challenge accepted.
All right. Well, hey, we probably will not talk about Trey Lance again here, but we're going to talk a ton of quarterbacks. Yeah, you never know, actually, with Dalton on the show. But we're going to talk about a ton of quarterbacks, everybody you need to know. For positional preview week, we've got, you know, just we're going to cover these positions extensively, especially here with quarterbacks today. But before we do that, we do have just a couple pieces of news here to hit before we jump into quarterback talk. And it's two running back stories. Notably, on Friday, of course, a Friday news drop, this would have to happen. ESPN's Adam Schefter reports that Alvin Kamara is going to be suspended for 3 games for his role in a fight outside a Las Vegas nightclub in 2022 after the Pro Bowl. Kamara was initially facing felony charges stemming from the fight that occurred over the weekend of the Pro Bowl, like I mentioned, but he eventually pled no contest to a misdemeanor and the felony charges were dropped. Dalton, we were going back and forth with this in an email thread with our fearless leader, Jason Klobach, on Friday. Like, how much does the six, you know, we thought it might be up to 6 games. It's only 3-game suspension. Does this change your calculation at all with Kamara or the other running backs in the New Orleans Saints backfield?
I didn't move him at all. I had him as my running back 29. It looks like his expert consensus ranks is the RB 27 in half point PPR. So I'm just a tad below him. But yeah, I didn't move him. I expected a suspension right around here. So it didn't affect my rankings too much. Good job with the Kamara call, by the way. I had to look up a video and he says it's Kamara, not Kamara.
Although he said in a tweet, because he's back on Twitter now, I guess, you know, post-legal situation, you get back on the old, now it's X, of course. He's an Xer. And he basically said, I say Kamara, my mom says Kamara, so kind of say whatever you want.
All right, okay.
Which is like not helpful. I kind of like when these guys are like, no, it's you know, like Najee Harris. Everybody calls him Najee Harris. He's like, no, it's Najee Harris, and you better call me Najee Harris. But anyways, I have Alvin Kamara at running back 28. Again, I didn't move him either because I feel like number one, 3 games, 6 games. Yeah, 6 games, obviously a harder suspension to weather, but 3 games is still not nothing. Especially when this year I have put a premium on kind of getting off to that fast start. I really want my teams, you know, to be better in September than they usually are. Kamara's not going to help you there at all. And Dalton, I think the part that goes under discussed about all this is, yeah, we knew the suspension was a possibility, but there's a lot of other questions facing Alvin Kamara this year. You know, he was legendarily efficient earlier in his career. He hasn't really been that player the last 2 years. We know last year they started, you know, replacing him on passing downs for like David Johnson and, you know, working in Mark Ingram. And now they've got Jamal Williams. They've got Kendre Miller. Like, what is Alvin Kamara's role going to be? And how good is he even going to be in that role? Like, those questions are there beyond just, okay, we know now he's only going to miss 3 games.
Yep, you nailed it. More depth in New Orleans. Will the targets be there? I mean, they've dried up the last year compared to his peak. And 28 years old, so he's probably running back I'm not going to be targeting in fantasy drafts, especially needing to wait a month before we even see him take the field.
I've thought about this too. Outside of like really special circumstances, this is something I want to keep bringing up. Obviously, we'll talk more about this on the Running Back Preview podcast tomorrow. But I want to keep focusing in on, like, we talk about, all right, running back targets are so valuable, and running back targets are incredibly valuable in fantasy football. Like Scott Barrett was just on the show and mentioned they're like 2.5 times worth a carry in like any sort of PPR format. So I get it. The running backs are targets are what we're looking for, but when you have great receivers to throw to or talented tight ends, like you have real pass catchers down the field, as an offense, you don't want to be throwing the ball like 90, 100 times to your running back. And I really think, if obviously Michael Thomas's health notwithstanding, but like, yo, they have Chris Olave. Like, Chris Olave is one of the best young receivers in the NFL. Like, you're going to funnel targets to that guy. If Michael Thomas is out there, you're going to funnel targets to that guy. Rashid Shaheed's a pretty good player. The tight end room is like very deep at this point. I have no idea what to do with the tight end room in fantasy. So I just don't think, as an offense, they're going to really, even if they kind of work things out with Kamara and the coaching staff and him are more in sync this year than in previous years, this is just not that offense, like, structurally, that's going to funnel the ball to him. And I kind of think that's a good thing. I think we need to apply that logic to more running back situations around the league generally.
Kendre Miller could be a thing too. One counter is the Saints and Falcons just glaringly stand out as the easiest schedules this season, just kind of historically. So, you know, you have show some patience. Kamara, the second half of the season, if he is targeted like in years past, he could be a huge fantasy win. But just that stage of his career, it's more likely that he continues to see fewer and fewer touches and opportunities per game, even after he does return.
Okay, only other piece of news here. The Cardinals signed Marlon Mack, formerly of the Denver Broncos. It's funny, we just went on this whole soliloquy, Scott and I, on the last episode about, oh, James Conner, and, you know, he's got no one else in the backfield. Keontae Ingram, like these Corey Clements back there, like I don't think these guys are going to move the needle. Does Marlon Mack move the needle for you at all? Were you even drafting James Conner prior to this? I mean, I don't know. For me personally, I don't think he really moves the needle with the equation of James Conner being a bell cow back.
Return of the Mack. No, he doesn't move the needle at all for me. The Cardinals are underdogs in all 17 games this season. So, I mean, Conner weirdly just puts up massive fantasy points without Kyler Murray the past year and a half. And he's going to get a lot of opportunities. But no, he's not. Again, and a guy misses multiple games per year and at his age, not a target of mine. But I will talk just briefly about Kyler Murray. I wrote an article, quarterback article, but to keep with the theme of this pod, man, his ECR is still quarterback 24, and I just don't get it. This is someone who could miss half the season, maybe the whole season, with Caleb Williams the prize at the end. The Cardinals regime, the new regime, is not tied to Murray at all. Got 6.1 YPA last season before going down. He's not going to run the same after returning, and big splits with and without DeAndre Hopkins. So, sorry, I just wanted to say while we're on the Cardinals, is I think Kyler Murray is getting a little bit drafted too high.
But with that, let's transition to our main topic here today. Like I said, it's positional preview week. For each of these positions this week, we're going to start with a wide angle view. We're also going to identify candidates that can make the leap. What I'm most excited about, like I just said, we're going to talk about the biggest players that we disagree on. And then we're going to end with telling you who is our guy for the position in 2023. So let's start out with that wide angle view of the position, Dalton. And you and I kind of already started to have this conversation, you know, do we wait on the position, or do you go with the elite guys, and that both of those are kind of justifiable this year? But Dalton, you just mentioned that you wrote a quarterback article. So tell the people about it.
Yeah. Every year I do a Dalton versus the ECR, the expert consensus ranks, where I get them, where I'm very different. Some I'm higher on, some I'm lower on. That article is coming out Monday. So check that out. Maybe it's worth noting, maybe it's not, but Fantasy Pros grades all of us rankers. And out of 248 drafters last year, I did finish first in the quarterback category here. So
I
did do well there. But I'd be remiss if I didn't say this, though. Again, I said there were 248 rankers. I ranked 249th in tight ends. Somehow I ranked even lower than the bottom there. So I am a boom and bust ranker. People who follow me, I'm very different than consensus. And I do tend to be either do very well or sometimes poorly here and there. So that's one thing about my ranking, is it's I'm not afraid to at least go out on limbs. So that'll certainly come through this column during this conversation we have right here on this pod about quarterbacks.
Yeah, you and I are definitely the same in that way. Like, I was the most accurate draft ranker in 2020, which was funny because that was like the COVID year, like the weirdest year ever to get right. And that was ended up being a pretty good year for me. But then like last year, I think I ranked like 190 something ranking wide receivers. So yeah, please sign up for my website. Yeah. No, but it's, I'm not trying to, that somebody mentioned that to me. I'm like, I'm not charting all these routes to try to win a rankings contest, pal. So like, you know, give me a break. But yeah, no, boom or bust is kind of the way that I go, as well with like rankings. And again, we talked about rankings all last week and the struggle that is rankings and conveying things through rankings. So, but I do like looking where I'm different than consensus, where you're different than consensus. And there's actually a few that are really interesting. I just kind of want to dive into that too. Some of the players we're going to talk about a little bit later, but like, yeah, you've got Anthony Richardson higher. You've got Brock Purdy, who we're going to talk about. Sam Howell, you're higher than consensus. And then a couple others you're lower, like Deshaun Watson. You got Kirk Cousins ranked at 18, and his expert consensus rank is 13. Why so low on Kirk, bro?
I mean, maybe he improves during year two in Kevin O'Connell's system, and Jordan Addison for sure is an upgrade at wide receiver too. But I just simply cannot get behind a quarterback who does not run and just got 7.1 YPA last year being drafted as a fantasy QB1. He typically never is, and his YPA dropped dramatically last year. He was awesome in the Netflix show Quarterback, but as I wrote in the article, I do not like his ECR at all, man. I mean, you're drafting him. There's no upside there. He probably is floors higher than where I have him ranked, of course. But why in the world are you drafting Kirk Cousins, unless you're in a super flex league, over Anthony Richardson's upside. I mean, to me, that is just like the wrong decision there. And I would even take Brock Purdy over Cousins 8 days a week, and he goes much later. So no thanks for 7.1 YPA, and he doesn't run. I mean, his touchdown rate could really drop if he doesn't improve that efficiency.
It's interesting. A couple things there. One, that's a great example of like, all right, are you ranking to win the rankings contest, or are you ranking to like tell people who to draft and where you want them to go with your rankings? Because you, like you said, he's going to finish higher than quarterback 18,
but 1,000%. Yeah.
Who cares, right? Because what you're saying is like, this is just not really a guy you need to put a ton of premium on focusing on. So that he makes a lot of sense from the wide angle view of the position discussion. Anyways, it is interesting about Kirk, and I've watched a few of the episodes of the quarterback show, so maybe I'm buying into this a little bit, but I do kind of feel like even if the numbers weren't great, like you mentioned, 7.1 YPA, it was his lowest since 2018, 4.5% touchdown rate, his lowest since joining the Minnesota Vikings. I get that those efficiency metrics weren't there. You know, his quarterback rating or his QBR was like only 49.9. It was his lowest of his Vikings tenure. In a weird way, though, I think a lot of that is because they actually put more on Kirk Cousins' plate last year in that offense than the Mike Zimmer years were, where he was basically just a caretaker. They were running the ball a ton. They asked him to do a lot of complex stuff. And what you definitely get from watching the quarterback show is he was getting, you know, pummeled back there. He took more hits, I think, than any other quarterback in the NFL last year, which is crazy. Or at least for a long stretch of time, that was true. I'm not saying there's any upside with Kirk, really, but he's part of a whole tier of guys that we'll talk about that could, if things break right, they could be top 10 passers. But I agree that even if I think Kirk kind of actually played a little bit better than people think last year, and he's really taken, I think, a step as an individual quarterback, weirdly, this late into his career, you know, 35 years old this season, I do get what your point about like there's just not a lot of upside for fantasy.
But I do get your point that maybe they changed their offense this year too with the addition of Addison. I mean, I'm actually pushing people away from Hawkinson this year in part because you take away the one game against the Giants who sold out against JJ that week. He had a 5.9 yards per target, Hawkinson, just getting force fed, and it was very inefficient offense. Even their running game, you look at their EPA per rush dropped dramatically after the Hawkinson trade. So maybe they go back to the lab and completely change their offense, and that results in better YPA, fewer targets to Hawkinson, more to Addison, and those become more efficient. But even then, whatever. When his Cousins, has he ever finished top eight or something? I mean, I just think his range of outcomes is like you said it perfectly. He's certainly more likely to finish higher than 18th. I have him, but I just don't think he's very likely to help win your fantasy league.
Yeah, totally agree. Okay, so we had this conversation, Dalton, where like how do you approach quarterback? And I think, like I said then, I think quarterback sort of starts it all this year. How you're going to approach that position? Are you going to be, you know, Pat Mahomes, Jalen Hurts, Josh Allen guy? Like, are you taking quarterback early? Or are you content to wait for some of the guys that are going to be, you know, ranked 10 to 14 or whatever? Are you going to, I think that really informs the entire structure of your team. So what are the benefits of just closing your eyes and taking one of these elite players at the top versus trying to wait a little bit this year?
Yeah, I'm okay with any strategy you want here. I've taken Jalen Hurts in round two. I mean, here's someone who led all fantasy quarterbacks in points per game weeks 1 through 15 last year before the injury, getting 8.0 YPA, but also the second most expected rushing touchdowns in the league. I mean, look at that combo. I mean, that's just ridiculous for fantasy. The addition of AJ Brown, such a help, and Hurts just got better as a player. I mean, look at do you know that Jalen Hurts threw the 34th most fourth quarter pass attempts last year?
Insane.
I mean, it's just crazy. So the volume should change there with game script changing. You know, they won 14 games last year. Eagles have an over-under of about 10 wins this year. So I'm okay with drafting him. He's my number one QB, taking him in the second round. Obviously, Patrick Mahomes is the GOAT. Josh Allen. I'm also okay with waiting rounds 4 and 5 for Justin Fields, whom I'll talk more about later. But I'm like close to ranking him number one, but it just doesn't make sense with where you have to draft him. So I have him as my QB4, super happy to target him in rounds 4 and 5. But really, my number one strategy is probably waiting, and obviously super flex league's totally different, but we'll get to all these guys I like later. But man, the Tuas, Daniel Jones, Geno Smith, Anthony Richardson, Brock Purdy, there are so many options that are available in rounds 9 on that I'm liking to target. I'm liking to target tight end later and quarterback later, and just loading up on receivers and running backs.
Yeah, it's really tempting. Again, this is my great debate this year, and I think I'll probably, so far in early mock drafts and stuff like that we've published for the site, I've mostly taken a quarterback high. I've mostly been taking Jalen Hurts or, you know, Josh Allen, or I think Lamar Jackson I took in the last one, and I felt really good about taking Lamar where he went. I think Lamar actually weirdly represents a little bit of a value, yeah. And we'll get to that in just a second, but I think that you're right, though, and that's where I'm struggling, that I really want Jalen Hurts' upside. We both have him, actually, as quarterback one, despite the fact that he's not the expert consensus-ranked quarterback one. He's actually three, which is pretty crazy. I really want, like, a Jalen Hurts-type ceiling, but the fact that you can get, like, an arbitrage guy like an Anthony Richardson or, you know, certainly a Justin Fields a little more highly ranked, or even, I don't know, some of these guys, like, it makes it really tough to sit there and not, because I think running back gets a little hairy, and I think receiver, I really want to make sure I've got three receivers that, as Scott said, it was Scott that said this, that you want those guys to start themselves. You don't want to have a bunch of questions about those players. So for that reason, I have found myself sort of wanting to try at least to get some of these guys that go a little bit later on. But let's just talk about the top 10 consensus ranked players of the position and just kind of lay that out for folks. So right now, quarterback one, Patrick Mahomes, number two, Josh Allen, three, Jalen Hurts, four, Lamar Jackson, five, Joe Burrow, six, Justin Fields, seven, Justin Herbert, eight, Trevor Lawrence, nine, Deshaun Watson, who we're going to talk about in a little bit, and 10 is Dak Prescott. Lamar Jackson, as I mentioned, quarterback four. Typically when you see like tiers and stuff like that, he's not in the group with Mahomes, Allen, and Hurts. I think he belongs, though, in the first tier of quarterbacks, just because he has the same upside that Jalen Hurts does. Am I right or wrong about this?
Totally right. And he goes right around Justin Fields as well. And I would put him in that same tier. The upside's there. I think he's average. Him and Fields average the most rushing fantasy points per game ever for among quarterbacks. And obviously now they're going to spread it wide, run a faster pace. Todd Monken, everyone's excited. Flowers looks great. So yeah, I would not push back here whatsoever. He's got that upside to finish as the QB one without question. I mean, he's won a league MVP before, right?
Yeah, he's won a league MVP before, and with a receiver core that doesn't look anything like this, with an offense that's not going to look anything like this from a structural perspective. I think what's crazy too, we talk about spreading the field and how that's going to be great for these receivers, and like we're going to see more of Lamar Jackson as a true passer, which I think he can thrive in those true passing situations. But one thing that we also underrate is when you get like tight ends and fullbacks out of the box, that's going to open up the scrambling windows, right? Like, how often for these like Lamar Jackson big plays that you picture does he have to juke out like two linebackers before he gets into the open field, where he's one of the most dangerous players in the NFL, period? But like, you're not going to have those extra linebackers or safeties in the box because they're going to spread the field. And you know what? If they do continue to stack the box because the Ravens run game and because of Lamar Jackson, like, they now have receivers in Odell Beckham, obviously Rashad Bateman, if and when he's ever healthy, and certainly Zay Flowers from a slot perspective. Like, those guys can win one-on-one matchups. So it's, I just think that like the QB1 overall is well within Lamar Jackson's range of outcomes this year. And again, he's not even really ranked in like the first tier of quarterbacks. That's why I think he presents the perfect, okay, kind of compromise between, I don't want to take Jalen Hurts in like the second or third round, but if I can get Lamar in like the fourth or fifth or something like that, I feel really, really good about that, and still being able to stack high quality receivers up there.
Left tackle Ronnie Stanley was battling an injury last year. Man, Zay Flowers just continues to impress. We both love Bateman. Imagine if he actually stayed healthy. The Ravens have been dealing with third, fourth string running backs the last couple of years. Imagine if J.K. Dobbins is actually healthier. Isaiah Likely looks like a dude. So that division, perennially defensive battles could turn into more shootouts too. So yeah, there's nothing. There's a lot to like about LJax. We just need him to stay healthy.
Anything else you want to pull out from the top 10 here? It's pretty chalky across all, ranked players and stuff like that.
Only note I have here is I guess Joe Burrow's status needs to be maybe monitored a little bit more than I'd given it credit for, with Chase saying, I hope he's here by week five. I mean, I was kind of just not too worried about it, but if Burrow misses a month, we have to reassess. That's my only thought.
I think that's actually a fair call out. And it's good that you mentioned the Jamar Chase thing. If you didn't see it, I think it was with Andrew Siciliano and Brian Baldinger on NFL Network, where they asked him like, hey, what do you, when do you think Chase will be out there? Or, when do you want to see him out there? Whatever. He said, I don't want to see him until week five. Basically, I told him to take it pretty similarly. being Ja'Marr Chase saying this to Joe Burrow. I told Joe to basically take it pretty similarly to how I did my hip, which is like, he didn't want to come back early from that. He wanted it to be right. He wanted it to be 100%. I still can't believe, by the way, that like Ja'Marr Chase came back from a hip injury and played as well as he did down the stretch. That's like bananas to me. And I think when we're talking about, maybe he wasn't used as much downfield last year, that might be a part of it too. Like the guy was, you know, playing, it's like a busted hip. I mean, my God, your hip, imagine. So,
Ja'Marr Chase, 3 fewer touchdown catches in 21 fewer games than Justin Jefferson. And yet I'm the crazy one ranking him ahead. It's weird. Like, I hear even these other podcasts, like, not only is Jefferson the consensus, but he should be in its own tier. I'm like, wait a minute. One guy's tied to Joe Burrow. The other guy's tied to Captain Kirk. I mean, what is happening here? Again, 3 fewer touchdown catches, 21 fewer games, and he played with a old man hip for half the last season. So, and he's younger, by the way, than Jefferson. So, yeah. I mean, obviously, if Burrow misses a first month of the year, right, then I'll concede. I'll concede. Fine. Okay. I concede Jefferson then. But otherwise, I don't get why it's at least not like a real strong debate.
So you have Joe Burrow as quarterback 6. I have him at 5. He's kind of consensus quarterback 5. That's just because you're bold with Justin Fields, who we're going to talk about a little bit later. For sure, we're going to go deep on that one. But any concern to move him below like a Trevor Lawrence type or a Herbert type with the possibility of this? Or is he just kind of a guy like, yeah, I'm going to keep ranking him at quarterback 5, but I probably prefer you not to draft him.
Yeah, that's fair. I just really don't target these non-running quarterbacks who still go pretty high, like Burrow, who's awesome. I mean, by the way, in real life, I get it. He could easily win.
He's got a little bit of Lawrence.
And Lawrence, they do run a little too. You're right.
But he's playing with a calf injury. He's probably not going to do that. He's probably not going to run as much, you'd think.
But to answer your question, sure, if you want to lower Burrow below Lawrence and Herbert because of this injury, that would make some sense probably.
All right, let's talk some candidates to make the leap. These are guys that aren't even really close to like the expert consensus ranked top 12 guys. These are you know, some younger players, especially. I want to just focus on just younger players. Our guy, Sam Howell. Dad was staying at the house over the weekend. Still very gassed about Sam Howell. He was very excited to see that, especially now that, you know, Dan Snyder's out of the mix. It's a good time to be excited about Washington football. Although Ron Rivera is out there saying, hey, don't sleep on Jacoby Brissett, right? So there's still a very real chance, Dalton, that both these guys start games for Washington this year. But I think Sam Howell's going to get a pretty long leash. And like, hey, if you drafted Joe Burrow early and he does miss the first 4 weeks, I'd love to take a chance on a guy like Sam Howell, who might have more upside, I think, than he's being given credit for. You and I are both well ahead of consensus on old Sam Howell there. You're pretty far up there. I'm pretty far up there as well. So what are the upside benefits to potentially taking Sam Howell late?
You just look at his college profile, and those quarterbacks are typically drafted much higher in the league. And B, the weapons, Terry McLaurin, Dotson, and even Samuel could be well above average this season. And Howell also runs. I spread fake news on a few podcasts ago. I fell for a tweet that said that his 40 time was, I believe, the same as Peyton Manning. That was using high school metrics. So I believe he has improved there. It's still, the jury remains out if he can physically do this in the pros, but projection systems have him rushing for like 40 yards per game. I mean, that's great for fantasy. So, I just think his college profile suggests he should have been drafted, could have been drafted higher. He has tremendous weapons in Washington and he runs. So to me, he's an ideal super flex guy. You can get him later, because I don't know if his ceiling's quite, you know, top 10 finish. But yeah, I'm in on Howell, but his ADP hopefully remains in check because of these quotes. It's Jacoby Brissett, you know, outplayed Deshaun Watson last season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, Jacoby was really good. And I think he is a great backup plan for Washington. A couple of things. One, obviously, yeah, love the weapons, love the guys they have there. Huge Terry McLaurin, Jahan Dotson, Curtis Samuel fan. I'm a fan of all three of those guys. I also think, too, you know, there's been a lot of headlines out of Washington, like, oh, you know, the offense is really struggling in camp. Number one, we don't care as much about that. Like, Marlon Humphrey even pointed out about the Ravens, how there was this headline that got out, how they'd thrown like 9 interceptions or something in practice. And Marlon Humphrey is like, yeah, we're practicing scenarios that the defense is in advantageous situations. So like, keep that in mind. Also, Washington's defense is really good. Like, once Jack Del Rio got off Twitter last year, that defense was flying, man. Like, that was and they're a very, very talented group. So if Sam Howell is struggling in practice against this defense, he might not play defenses better than this for, you know, the bulk of the season, although he's playing a bunch of really good ones in the NFC East, actually. It's also worth noting, you said about projection system. When you go back and look, I know we think of Ron Rivera as this like boomer ball coach, and he is definitely like defense run game oriented, you know, and Eric Bieniemy, it's tough to separate what he was from Andy Reid. And he is obviously a former running back. Maybe he wants to get in there and really be like more of a conservative offense. But under Ron Rivera, with Scott Turner at the helm, obviously, again, you know, they fire Scott Turner, they bring in Eric Bieniemy, but like, we know the Chiefs play fast, we know they run a ton of plays, and in 2021, like, Washington had a really like pretty solid run play percentage and pretty high pass rate, especially in 2020, and they ran a decent bit of plays. Like, I think the structure of this offense benefits Sam Howell as well.
Yeah, you know, if he really does hit that 44 rush yards per game projection, that's like him starting with a touchdown pass per game as far as fantasy scoring with the four. I mean, that really is just you know, a cheat code, as they call it. So I really like Sam Howell as one of these guys possibly breaking out, even more so in fantasy because of the rushing, even more so in fantasy than real life. But I think so for both cases. But we're going to talk about a few here with some even greater upside.
Nobody seems to think upside belongs near the name of Kenny Pickett. But I kind of think it does, Dalton. Look, Kenny Pickett can move a little bit. He ran last year. I think that, God, I really don't want to get excited about the Steelers offense, right? I say this all the time. Not a fan of Matt Canada's offense. I think it's the worst designed offense in the NFL, but I think they did a little bit better from a route combination at the end of the year. The Steelers also, they're another team, like a 39% run play percentage the last 3 years on average. They're more balanced last year in Kenny Pickett's rookie season, but Matt Canada typically has run these pass first offenses. There's a lot of play volume on the table. The last 3 years, they've averaged 1,088 plays. That's the sixth most in the NFL. So the structure is there for Kenny Pickett. And again, 237 rushing yards, 3 scores on 55 carries in 13 games. He had the sixth longest time to throw in the NFL last year, indicating he was, you know, scrambling and like, I think he played pretty well in like second reaction plays. He's got to be better inside structure, that's for sure. But he was a rookie. I don't know what Kenny Pickett's ceiling is as like a real life NFL quarterback, Dalton, but I think he could be like the 19th best quarterback in the NFL, the 18th best quarterback in the NFL. He's not really a similar player to Kirk Cousins, but I think he could be like in the Kirk Cousins, like a diet version of Kirk Cousins. Like, I think that might be like his ceiling maybe. So what does that mean in real life? I don't know. But if he runs like that, and if everybody's on board with, you know, George Pickens taking the leap, which I think he can really take the leap as a vertical X receiver. And if he stretches out his skill set, he could be a very, very good player. Fan of Deontay Johnson, fan of Allen Robinson, fan of Pat Freiermuth. Like, things are kind of set up for Kenny Pickett to have way more upside than the quarterback 22 as he's ranked right now. Am I crazy for seeing like a ceiling present for Kenny Pickett in fantasy?
Not crazy. Here's a JJ tweet. First half of last year, the Steelers 31st in scoring rate per drive, 32nd in yards per drive. Then they had the week 9 bye. Over the second half of the season, 7th in scoring rate per drive, 3rd in yards per drive. So certainly showed some life there. Of course, you always hammer home the Matt Canada retention. That saved his job that second half, but that's not ideal that he's returning. But I have Pickett and Howell ranked back-to-back in the low 20s, and they're totally fine in Superflex. Those are options I'd be targeting.
Yeah, I really like Kenny Pickett, and God, I don't know why. I don't have him ranked super high or anything like that, but I do have him ranked higher than where he's going.
You're gonna trash my guy Tua here in a short amount of time. Do you know they suffered the same number of concussions last year? They both had two. I understand the recovery process was a much longer for Tua, and it was scarier on national TV maybe both times. Totally. And we saw the fencing. But Pickett suffered two concussions. He was on protocol twice last year, and not a peep about that.
That is a very, very fair point, because you're right. I had kind of forgotten about that until thinking more about Kenny Pickett and like writing him up in some articles and stuff. And that is totally worth noting. I just think from like a fantasy perspective, I think he belongs in the same tier as like a Tua or a Kirk Cousins or an Aaron Rodgers or a Jared Goff. And like, he doesn't get ranked there really at all. So I think there's some decent value. It's probably more so in a super flex sense. But like, I mean, Jordan Love, it's one spot. Jordan Love is ranked 21 and Kenny Pickett's ranked 22 from an expert consensus perspective. And I don't think Jordan Love is bad or anything. There's been a lot of Jordan Love pop on Twitter lately, but like, I just think from an offensive structure perspective, the Steelers are ready to go. Whereas like the Packers, I just don't like, I didn't consider Love as a guy, like a candidate to make the leap, even though he fits from like the archetype perspective, younger guy that's going to get his first real extended look for this. So I just don't think that they have that same receiver talent. I think that the Steelers do. And that's really a big part of it. I just think from a talent perspective, they're really good.
I have it Hal, Pickett, and Love ranked back to back to back in that order, actually, which I'm sure is probably opposite of ECR.
So you like Jordan Love a little bit, at least. Do you think he makes sense as like a making the leap type candidate?
Yeah, he's another one right there. I have him a little below consensus there at 24, but absolutely he could. And Christian Watson continues to impress. So sure, Jordan Love could. He's a candidate there. Another like Desmond Ritter, maybe, you know, he's another possible Mac Jones. But let's talk about the far more exciting one next with AR.
Yes, right. The real making the leap candidate, and I mean making a leap, he has not played it down in the NFL, but Anthony Richardson can walk in from day one and be a QB1. And we are both pretty much on board with that, right? Like I have him at 13, you have him at 12 as an actual QB1. I have him in the same tier from a rankings perspective as Trevor Lawrence, Deshaun Watson, Daniel Jones, Geno Smith. Geno belongs, by the way, in the QB1 range. I have him right there with Dak Prescott. So again, QB13 for me with Anthony Richardson. Obviously, it's the rushing perspective, Dalton, but I really like the pass catchers as well.
Man, I love Richardson's setup here. So he's incredibly raw with fewer than 400 career college pass attempts. But I still say his fantasy floor is high as soon as he's, you know, named the starter, given his rushing ability. I mean, he's quite frankly an athlete. The quarterback position has never seen. I mean, it really is insane. And he doesn't take sacks. There's only been two first round rushing quarterback prospects to post a 12% pressure to sack rate in college. It's Anthony Richardson and Patrick Mahomes. And now he gets to work with Shane Steichen, you know, who really helped Justin Herbert and Jalen Hurts during the rookie season. I believe he helped both of them. I mean, it's wheels up for AR, who gets to play indoors, really solid pass catching group. I don't love Michael Pittman in fantasy terms this year, but you love him as a real life player and maybe even talked me into him with all the RPO talk last pod, but he's a future star in real life. So that's going to be helpful. So yeah, given Richardson playing indoors, his rushing ability, and I think he's going to start right away. Hopefully there's more Minshew talk to lower his ADP because it's crazy, an ECR of 18 right now, given his rushing prowess immediately.
I love that you made that point that he doesn't take sacks. There's a couple of things I think with Richardson where he's not really as raw as people think. He just obviously doesn't have a ton of experience. That part is not debatable. But like you look at the two teams last year that were just outliers, especially one of them in terms of throwing the ball. It was Chicago Bears, 377 pass attempts. I can't believe the Bears actually went a full NFL season in the year 2022, 377 pass attempts. And the Falcons at 415. You know, the gap there from 31 to 30, 415 pass attempts for the Falcons, 456 pass attempts for the Tennessee Titans at number 30. Like, that's what kind of crazy outlier stuff we're talking about, those two teams. And people will kind of, I think, potentially book the Colts into being that type of team as in Anthony Richardson's first season. And maybe they are in terms of passing volume. But the consistent theme of those two quarterbacks, yes, Marcus Mariota runs. Yes, Justin Fields runs. They both also take an absurd amount of sacks. I don't think Richardson's going to have that same problem as a rookie, which is why I think the floor is high and the ceiling is high.
One other note, Richardson, the highest average depth of target of the rookie quarterbacks, 47% of his passes went 10 plus air yards. So maybe Michael Pittman will see some deeper targets as well. So very interesting player. His profile is truly the word unique. You know, I mean, it is. He really does stand out athletically at the quarterback position. So I can't wait to watch him play and can't wait to watch him rack up fantasy points on my team.
100%. Where do you think he ends up getting drafted from an ADP perspective if he is named the starter before week one?
Yeah, right around where we have him, 11, 12, 13, right? Borderline QB1 in fantasy toward the end is what I would expect. Unless people are cowards. I mean, people are cowards, you know, drafting people if you haven't seen it before. But come on, Richardson looks like again, the thing is not just the upside, but it's really a safer floor, the guys that run. You know, it really helps build the floor, too. So I like Anthony Richardson, and I think he's going to settle in as a top 12 drafted quarterback over the second half of August.
100%. All right, let's move into our biggest player disagreements, the spots where Dalton and I are kind of farthest apart in rankings. And we'll start with Deshaun Watson, who I have at QB9. Dalton, you have him at QB 14. There's plenty of reason to be skeptical with Deshaun Watson, starting with the fact that he was terrible when he played last year. So why are you not just lower than me, but also pretty lower than consensus on Deshaun?
Yeah, so in 2020, Watson led the NFL by a wide margin with 8.9 YPA on a poorly coached Houston team without DeAndre Hopkins. So, like, I get the upside. And it should be expected that he was going to struggle some after missing significant time. But, man, he was bad. I mean, 28th in adjusted net yards per attempt, 33rd in deep ball accuracy, the same EPA per dropback as Zach Wilson. Curiously, Jacoby Brissett, you know, badly outplayed him in the same exact setup. Wind contributed to some of that woeful inaccuracy, as people will point out. But guess what? He still plays in Cleveland. Yeah. I mean, the weather's going to be an issue every season there. He's still just 28 years old, likely going to be better this year for sure. The addition of Elijah Moore is admittedly a big, big upgrade. But man, he'd need to dramatically improve to be worth where he's getting drafted as a top 10 fantasy QB. Do you know these guys? I mean, there's so many awesome options. I get that he runs and the Browns do have a very good roster. But if you checked out that Warren Sharp tweet about his 10 deepest throws last year, I mean, it's kind of a nightmare. But let's hear your counter. Yeah, go ahead. Warren Sharp posts his Deshaun Watson's longest pass attempts from 2022 in order. And it's quite the thread. Quite the thread.
Okay, I'll have to go take a look at it. You know, I don't feel a ton of conviction with Deshaun Watson. I just feel like if you were drafting a guy that's not in that elite tier or the next tier down, right? The elite tier, we've talked about it. It's Hurts, it's Mahomes, it's Allen, it's Lamar Jackson. And then I think the next group is Burrow, Justin Fields, Justin Herbert. And then I think maybe Trevor Lawrence joins that group. Like, I think Lawrence is my favorite target if I'm not taking one there and I'm waiting a little bit. But we do know that Watson has that ceiling as a player. Maybe that guy is just gone forever. I think the answer is probably that he'll be somewhere between what he was last year and what he used to be. I think it's not crazy to just say, like, yeah, look, and I'm definitely not making excuses for the guy. We know these are all problems of his creation, but the guy didn't play the position of quarterback for, you know, like 2 years, basically. That's hard to come back from. Like, it's just hard to learn all that without actually doing it and taking that long a gap while also having I'm not looking at that thread right now, Dalton. I'm making the point about Deshaun Watson, but I'll look at it later. I think that when you just think about him from a ceiling perspective, I believe that they're going to open that offense more. I also think there is a little, and this is something to be concerned about too, that there is, I think, a little bit of an oil and water sort of perspective there with Kevin Stefanski's like kind of cookie cutter conservative offense and what Deshaun Watson was at his best in his Houston days. But if they can kind of meet in the middle there and they can figure each other out, I just think the ceiling is present for Watson. But I think you're right to point out that his floor is certainly lower as well.
Those are all fair points, and I get I'm against the consensus here, but I personally would just way prefer Tua, Daniel Jones, Geno Smith, guys like that, which I'll explain further shortly.
Let's talk Tua, because that's another one of our big disagreements here. You have him at quarterback 8. I have him at quarterback 14. From a consensus perspective, you're pretty well ahead. I'm pretty below here on Tua. I'll just point out some of my concerns. Obviously, the health thing is a concern with Tua. I also think this team is really like a little bit more fragile than people want to admit. Is their run game going to be better this year? I think that is absolutely paramount. What if Tyreek Hill gets hurt? You know, what if Jalen Waddle gets hurt? And like, you can say that about anybody. Any offense is going to be worse if they lose their star pass catchers. This team is just not set up to sustain an injury. They have really no third pitch. It's those two guys, and that's about it. And look, when you can build an offense around those two guys, you should absolutely do it. Like, that's great. But I just think there's a lot of fragility with Tua from his own injury perspective, from his team's perspective. Their offensive line, their most important offensive lineman, Teron Armstead, also has injury issues as well. And that's another part of the reason why the offense went in the tank without Tua last year, is because their offensive line stinks. I just think there's a lot of risk with Tua to the point that, like, okay. And I, by the way, I don't think he has really the same ceiling as a guy like Deshaun Watson. Like, I think Watson has a higher individual player ceiling for sure. And therefore, I can easily see him being more of a top five quarterback than I could see from Tua. So I just don't see any reason really to take Tua when I think Geno Smith has the same ceiling. I think Daniel Jones has the same ceiling. I think, like, even I mean, Dak Prescott, Tua, like, what's the difference really there? So, and I would take Anthony Richardson over him as well, just because, again, the floor-ceiling combination is better to me.
Tua typically goes later than Dak. You mentioned him in this Tua in the same breath as Kenny Pickett earlier, the same fantasy tier, which I simply cannot get behind and won't stand for on this podcast. Tua led the NFL in quarterback passer rating, yards per attempt, TD percentage, yards per completion last season. His 8.9 YPA was one of the 10 best seasons since the 80s. It helps having two legitimate superstars to throw to. Tua had as many touchdown passes as Tom Brady last season in 333 fewer attempts. He had the same, TD percentage as Patrick Mahomes. So Tua can regress that YPA and still lead the league. He was so, so good. Removing games he left injured, he was season pace with 37 touchdown passes. We just need him to stay healthy, and I think he's a league MVP candidate given his weapons.
One thing I'll point out too, I think we act like, oh, it's all okay as long as Tua is healthy. There was a stretch to like before he suffered the second concussion, the second concussion against the Packers. And I think he was probably concussed during that game. That's why he threw those three picks. I get that. But like, also that's an assumption. We don't know that to be the case, right? Like, so I think saying it for sure is, kind of silly. But like, if you just look at those last four games he played, 52.6% completion rate, 6 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. He took 9 sacks. Like, his yards per attempt was still high. The big plays were still there, but they were not a good offense against the 49ers. They were not a good offense against the Los Angeles Chargers on Sunday night. Like, even the Bills, I think they ran the ball really well. Like, that's why I think running the ball is a key for this team this year. They weren't still like an efficient down to down offense. There was some big plays from Jalen Waddle in that Bills game, but there were still some hiccups there. I don't know, man. I think there are more questions about, can this offense repeat what it did last year? Is there a blueprint out on this offense? I think is a fair question about this team too.
Yeah, they run a ton of motion. They have a legend at head coach. And again, I just can't harp. 8.9 YPA is just staggering. I mean, that is just so efficient and just is epic. And that typically leads to 40 plus touchdown passes. You get the YPA above 8.5 like that. So I just think that I get that the fantasy, the rushing stats won't be there. And there's some added, certainly additional health risk here. And that includes the two superstar receivers. But if everything goes right, to me, this is one of those Tua could have just a special type MVP real life season.
Yeah, we just disagree on that one. But right. People can decide which one they buy into here. Last one, players we disagree on, shock, your guy Brock Purdy. You are higher than consensus on Brock Purdy. You have him at quarterback 15. Expert consensus wise, he's still down there at 25. I'm ahead of consensus on Brock Purdy, by the way. I have him at 20. I think 25 is still like I still see people talk about like who's gonna start week one. I mean, we know who's starting week one. Like, it's gonna be Brock Purdy. You seem to think he has a higher fantasy ceiling. And again, I don't know that I'm gonna have a big counter argument here to you for Brock Purdy, because I do have him ranked ahead of consensus, and I think he fits in this making the leap group here. But just tell the people why, like, they can potentially draft Brock Purdy, maybe not as a QB1, but like a starting quarterback in Superflex for sure.
Well, I love Trey Lance for fantasy purposes because of the system and the players around him, not because I was a big fan of his in college. And yeah. Purdy admittedly does not have the fantasy upside as Lance possesses. That is true because of the theoretical upside. Correct. Yes. Just because of the rushing ability. But man, it's clear Kyle Shanahan is sold on Purdy as his guy. And I mean, it's hard to argue against him. BCB is in the world's best system. He's up there among all quarterbacks in fantasy points per dropback last year. He posted the best passer rating ever by a rookie with his amount of attempts. Led the league in touchdown passes after taking over the starting role. He gets to throw to Debo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle, and Christian McCaffrey. And I mean, this is a system that has Nick Mullins, the second most passing yards in NFL history over his first 16 games. So it's just an awesome situation to be in. And it's clear that Purdy is Shanahan's guy. So, and he looks healthy recovering from that elbow surgery. This much is clear as far as Mr. Irrelevant Purdy. He's way better than Jimmy Garoppolo. That much I'm convinced of. So I think fantasy wise, maybe he doesn't possess the same type eight upside because he doesn't run. And the Niners, they run the ball a lot themselves. I would be shocked if Purdy stays healthy and he doesn't finish as a top 12 fantasy QB though in that system. Again, led the NFL in touchdown passes after taking over last year.
I love the conviction. Again, I really don't have a big counter argument here because I'm actually in on Brock Purdy. 8.9 adjusted yards per attempt. Once, like, if you include the game that he got in week 13 and started to play against the Miami Dolphins for Brock Purdy last year. Tua actually led the league, to make my argument look bad from the last one, 9.2 adjusted yards per attempt. Number two was Patrick Mahomes at 8.5, Jalen Hurts 8.4. Ironically, Jimmy Garoppolo at 8.4 as well. But some of this is the system, yeah. But I think Purdy elevates the system as well. I think that's why Shanahan loves him, because he is like, hey, I'm going to get this guy open. Fine, like, you just get the ball to that guy. But also Purdy adds a little bit of juice as well. That's why I like him with Ayuk, because he opens up, I think, the deep outside the numbers passing game. That is certainly, when you look at him versus Jimmy Garoppolo, a big, big difference for Brock Purdy there. So I'm actually not against you here. And similarly to the Tua stuff, like I said, one of those guys goes down, this offense looks considerably worse. The 49ers can lose players and still be well, all right.
First of all, glad you're capitulating and already admitting the Tua loss, pointing out how he was in a whole tier by himself on that adjusted yards per attempt. And secondly, you know, I just pulled the trigger, bud. I know you're going to be okay with it, but I made the flippening. I moved Ayuk above Debo. I moved him he's wide receiver 20. I mean, the guy is he's just going to torch the league this year, I'm convinced.
We have him in the same range. I'm doing the hedge ranking, and I have Ayuk at 20 and Debo at 21. So it's like, take Debo, well, that's fine.
I'm 20 and 21 also. Just flip. I just have, yeah, just, you're just a coward and you won't put Ayuk above him. But yeah, it's right.
No, I did. I have Ayuk at 20 and Debo 21.
Oh, sorry, I misheard you. We're exactly the same then.
We're in the
amazing.
Exact same.
Sorry. Yeah, exactly. All right. Exactly. Well, great minds. Sorry. I just assumed you were a coward.
And
there
is no backing down on the Tua thing. I'm still correct about Tua.
Okay. So, okay. Yeah, fair. Right. Okay.
I like Tua too, man. Oh, man. Now, by the way, Tua, another Hal Harmon favorite. He loves Tua. He actually didn't know I interviewed him at the Super Bowl, so he watched the YouTube video. He's a big, big Tua fan. Just, man, seems like such a humble guy. Again, he would hate if I did that voice on the podcast.
Your dad has great taste.
He is great taste in quarterback. He was a big Jalen Hurts guy, so he's at least got that one. We'll see if it worked out for Sam Howell as well. Okay, let's end this here, Dalton, with our guy at quarterback this year. You talked a lot about Justin Fields so far. He's your guy this year. Tell us why.
Okay, I can just briefly say I also really like Geno Smith, who led the league in completion percentage above expectation last year, and all the nerd ones too. Passes beyond 20 yards, hero throws. He also led the league in end zone targets, which fantasy managers like, and he's getting I'm just convinced JSN is the next bona fide superstar. I mean, he's averaging 192 receiving yards last time we saw him healthy, sharing the field with other elite receivers. So Geno, I think, is a dark horse MVP real life candidate because the NFC is so wide open, and every year the winner is a top seed, and the Seahawks or Niners could be one of the two or three, you know, favorites to be the top seeds there. And both their quarterbacks, Purdy and Geno, are 45-1 and 40-1 MVP long shots. Okay,
Dalton,
sorry.
Dalton, let's just go ahead and say Geno Smith is both of our honorable mention, your guy, because I also have him ranked as a QB1. I'm with you. Can I give you one more nerd stat for Geno Smith?
Please.
You know, we've been doing, we hired Derek Klassen to do quarterback charting over at Reception Perception. Geno Smith led the NFL among all the guys he's charted so far, 75% success rate versus man coverage. And we know he's got man coverage beating receivers. Like, Geno Smith's performance from last year was legit. So we can both go ahead and say we're honorable mentioning Geno Smith as our guy. I think I might have Geno ranked ahead. No, I have one spot behind the guy who I'm going to say is my guy. But go ahead and get back to Justin Fields.
Imagine drafting Deshaun Watson over Geno. All right, so Justin Fields, he takes far too many sacks. No question, he has a long way to go as a passer. But man, he's averaged the most rushing fantasy points per game ever by a quarterback, or he's tied with Lamar. You know, he led all players in the NFL last year in runs of 20 plus yards. I mean, that is just insane for a quarterback. Justin Fields had more designed runs per game than DeAndre Swift last season. Number one in fantasy points per snap. Over the final second half of the year, he put up top 10 all-time fantasy QB numbers. He should improve his third year in the league. He did get better over the second half last season. DJ Moore addition should be huge. They also quietly improved their offensive line there. Look at Scott Barrett's column on fantasy points. Some of this stuff, you know, it can get a little bit too in the weeds, but Justin Fields projects to have the most improved schedule based on last year. So just the dramatic outlier from having one of the toughest to now one of the most favorable. Frankly, I'm closer to putting Justin Fields as my number one fantasy QB as I am lowering him below number four. I don't care how he is in real life. This is just fantasy gold.
I think my only counter to Justin Fields, and we're not necessarily debating these, but like that he might not be a good real life quarterback, but it does, it just really doesn't matter for fantasy. And you mentioned Scott Barrett, like invoking his upside wins championships. Like, yeah, I think Justin Fields has championship winning upside. DJ Moore's a very good player. Like, I don't want that to get lost in this discussion here. He is going to help Justin Fields a lot. So there's definitely, I think we can admit there is downside to Justin Fields, but I also think there's like a 0% chance he gets benched at any point. He would have to be god awful to get benched at some point this year, because I really think they're just trying to figure it out with him and like ride it out this year no matter what. But like realistically, they're not going to pull him. I just don't think that's going to happen. To like play PJ Walker, like they need to figure out Justin Fields. And I think getting benched is literally the only like way Justin Fields can fail in fantasy.
And I've heard people be like, oh man, imagine him in a Shanahan system. But one thing worth noting, or maybe only worth noting as a Niner fan myself, sorry, but bear with me, that there's no way that Shanahan could have dealt with the patience. Like the development of Justin Fields is taking a 3-year project here, you know? And so there's no way he could have even been getting the playing time he's receiving in Chicago. But yeah, I mean, maybe DJ Moore doesn't make the same impact that AJ Brown did for Jalen Hurts, but maybe it's a reasonable facsimile.
Yeah, even like a Bud Light version of that is going to be just fine, right? Like even a Diet Coke, like depleted sort of junior version is going to be totally fine because that is a huge jump than what he was doing last year. Okay, my guy, Daniel Jones, talked about it a lot. I've like been fully DJ pilled at this point. Like you look at the Bills offenses in 2020 and 2021, 38% rushing play percentage, 41% in 2021. Kansas City, where Mike Kafka comes from, averaged 37.5%. This team wants to push the ball. They just didn't last year because their two best players were Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley. I'm going to make that point a lot over the next few weeks. So I think Isaiah Hodgins is a good player. I think Darius Slayton is a nice role player. I think Jalen Hyatt, like I had my questions about Jalen Hyatt developing into a number one receiver, but he's really good deep threat, and like people posting his training camp highlights or whatever, him winning deep breaths, like, oh, the haters told me he was like, that's what he does. Like if he does that, that's a huge W. If that's all he does, it's even a huge W. They've got Sterling Shepard, my guy. He's going to have 3 weeks. Buddy, he is going to have 3 weeks this year. I was out with some friends this weekend talking about, like you got to stop talking about Sterling Shepard. And literally, like, every beer I had, he got, like, one more target per game. I'm like, oh, three games this year, he's going to average 10 targets per game. A few beers in, I'm like, 3 games this year, he's going to average 14 targets per game. You just watch. But seriously, that probably is going to happen. So I like the setup for Daniel Jones. I think the offensive line is getting better with some younger players too. Andrew Thomas is one of the best players at left tackle, period, right now. Like, we love the structure and ecosystem for Daniel Jones. Darren Waller, Scott Barrett and I talked about him, why we're so excited about Darren Waller. And the guy runs a lot. So like, if he just runs close to the clip he did last year, produces better as a passer, like the turnovers and stuff like that, they got that out of his game. He doesn't even have to be very good in real life to be a great, like top, like potentially top five fantasy quarterback. And if he is really good in real life, like we're talking about a big time season here for Daniel Jones. I'm really, really high on him this year.
Couldn't agree with you more here. Absolutely love Dimes. Fifth most rushing yards among QBs last year, and the fifth most designed carries among QBs. NFL high 81% adjusted completion percentage. And now he's in year two in Brian Daboll's system. Last year, Daniel Jones ranked fourth from 12 personnel with 9.3 YPA, and now he gets Darren Waller addition. That should lead to more 12 personnel. You mentioned I believe before last season he was graded as one of the very best deep passers in the league. We just couldn't tell last year, and now Hyatt should help with that too. So an underrated deep passer who runs. I love Daniel Jones in that system. I frankly want to rank him above Justin Herbert. You just don't have to in drafts and the game theory. Don't need to, but I love his upside as in that system in this year. Danny Dimes. No more Danny Dogecoin. He's officially back to Danny Dimes.
Yep, and I think that is what we need for him to hit that fantasy ceiling this year. I think we are going to get it. I am closer after this podcast to putting Daniel Jones and Geno Smith ahead of Deshaun Watson in my quarterback rankings. He's already at quarterback 10 for me, Daniel Jones. I just think he's, I really want to try out some more drafts where he's my guy. And I think I'll try to pull that off. I just think there's a lot of ceiling with Daniel Jones this year.
Man, you can get him in round 10 in leagues, man. Yeah. Totally. Yeah, sure.
100%. All right. That's going to do it, Dalton. Hell of an episode. We went a little longer than we wanted to, but alas, what can you do? When we get together, we talk quarterbacks. We start disagreeing a little bit too. That's when you know you're going to get a nice long podcast.
Yeah, good times, man. Good stuff.
Shout out to Dalton for joining us. Shout out to Austin Eckler for joining us and welcoming him back to the podcast this year. Please make sure you go check out the Austin Eckler Foundation and everything they've got going on there from the fantasy league perspective. His third annual charity fantasy football league going on there at the Austin Eckler Foundation. So again, you can check that out on Austin's Instagram. It's probably the best way to do that. That's going to do it for this show. Tomorrow, we continue our positional preview week with a look at the running back position, and new Yahoo Fantasy contributor Jorge Martin joins me for that. Very excited to get Jorge on the podcast for the first time. Until then, we're out.